Friends and patrons, good evening. I'm Cole Thomas-Enridis with the Department of Diversity, Equity, and Community at San Francisco Opera. It is my pleasure to welcome you to the War Memorial House for this, the final production of our 101st season of storytelling at San Francisco Opera. Yes, we can clap for that, indeed. It's a nice thing about opera, you can always clap. It's not like when you get in trouble for clapping in between the movements, oh no. Tonight's composer is the beloved George Frederick Handel. Born in the Duchy of Magdeburg in Brandenburg, Prussia on the 23rd of February, 1685, Handel spent 74 years in this world, during which he composed over 600 works, including more than 120 cantatas, 42 operas, 30 concertos, and 24 oratorios, in addition to numerous trios, duets, arias, serenades, and sonatas. Really hate those overachievers. Despite that overwhelming output of creativity, most people today know Handel best for one very famous chorus. Sing it with me now. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Look at that, we've just revived the Sing It Yourself Messiah, an American holiday tradition first begun here in San Francisco in the 1980s. When I was just a little lad. And we even had someone singing harmony here, wonderful. There is also strong evidence that Handel may have been the composer of the traditional Christmas carol, Joy to the World. Mind you, that's Joy to the World, the Lord is come, not Jeremiah was a bullfrog. But let us turn our attention to today's title, Partenope. Lots of people have asked me how to say that, Partenope. A comic opera in three acts, first performed at the King's Theatre in London, England, in February of 1730. In fact, the premiere performance took place the day after the composer's 45th birthday, the same age I am now. I guess I have some catching up to do. You may laugh at that, too. Thank you. Partenope was the founding queen of Naples, and our story centers around her and her gaggle of suitors, the Prince of Corinth, Arsace, the Prince of Rhodes, Armindo, the Prince of Cume, Emilio, and the pretended Prince, Eurimene. I practiced that, Eurimene, there we go, who is actually Rosemira, Princess of Cyprus, and Rosemira is much easier to say, so I'm just going to call her that from now on. She is also the jilted lover of Arsace. How refreshing to see a comic opera whose story revolves around a strong woman and the men she deems disposable. This was especially rare in 1730, when Handel was most celebrated for the much more serious operas in the Italian style, which he is credited for bringing to England. The comic nature of our story was thought so frivolous at the time that Handel's initial proposal to write the work for the Royal Academy of Music was rejected. One of his contemporaries even remarked of the libretto that it was the very worst book he'd ever read. I assure you, however, that you are in store for an absolute delight as we treat you to a host of sublime arias, a raucous battle scene, and even a comic quartet, a feature rarely included in the operas of Handel or even in the Baroque era when ensemble numbers were not much of a thing yet. Add to that an opulent set designed by Andrew Lieberman, over the top and perfect for Pride Month costumes designed by John Morrell, and the hilariously splendid stage direction of Christopher Alden, in which we find ourselves in 1920s Paris, this production of Partenope is a feast for any aficionado of Baroque opera, as well as those who may be seeing an opera for their first time. Speaking of first timers, how many, if any, of you among us today are seeing your first opera? Do we have any first, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, a few, lovely, welcome. And how many of you are attending a production by San Francisco Opera for the very first time? A few as well, great. Well, whether you are new or a seasoned patron, please know you are most welcome. Our opera begins, as most Baroque operas do, with an overture in the French style. While modern audiences are quite accustomed, if not required, to be seated well before the overture begins, for 18th century opera goers, the overture was almost more of a fanfare meant to encourage audience members to take their seat and quiet down. and at times might even mark the entrance of the evening's most notable guests, perhaps even a king. These days, of course, such fanfare has been reduced to a polite ding, 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 dong. You'll hear such ding-donging three times before the doors are closed. And the ding-donging is better than the very rancid bell that we used to ring. But let us now lend our ears to the opening measures of the Overture to Partenope. Audio example one, please. So French. Of course, our composer was German, the opera is in Italian, and it was performed first in London, but that's opera. In this excerpt, we heard one of the most notable characteristics of the French overture style, those sequences of dotted eighths and sixteenth notes. Da, 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 da. They surely tell us someone very important has entered the room. Nothing sounds more royal. What happens next in this style of overture is often a fast-paced and playful fugue. For those of you wondering what's a fugue, think of a fancy version of Row, Row, Row Your Boat. The melody comes in, somebody else comes in with the melody, someone else comes in with the melody, that's a fugue. As if depicting stragglers running to their seats before the curtain rises. Now on to Act One. Partenope, the Queen of Naples, is entertaining her guests. Among them is the frightfully confident Arsace, Prince of Corinth, who seeks the queen's hand in marriage in order to amplify his own power and prestige. Also among the guests is the ever so shy and humble Armindo, Prince of Rhodes. Armindo seeks the hand of Partenope not for power, but instead something much more rare in the history of royal marriages, true love. Armindo's level of shyness and lack of confidence prohibit him from declaring his love to her, and instead mopes sadly around as wallflowers often do. Once he does muster the necessary courage, her response is along the lines of, "Thanks, but I've got my eyes on the quarterback." In this story, Arsace is said quarterback. And as if two suitors aren't enough for one woman or one opera, we next have the arrival of Prince Eurimene, who is actually the Princess Rosmira, the ex-girlfriend of Arsace. While Rosmira pretends to be a third contender for Partenope's hand in marriage, the true motive of the disguised princess is to foil the attempts of Arsace for that same prize, thereby keeping him available for herself. Though we, the audience, are meant to believe that Partenope is oblivious to the true gender of Rosmira, Arsace sees through the deception and confronts Rosmira. Claiming to still love her, he vows to prove his love by not betraying her secret. In case you are not yet confused by all this, let's add a fourth suitor to the mix. Enter Prince Emilio. Emilio comes from the neighboring kingdom of Cumae, and like many latecomers to a party, he has brought an entourage along with him. In fact, his very own army, who he uses to threaten war upon Naples unless Partenope agrees to marry him. Being the strong queen that she is, Partenope refuses to be intimidated and refuses his demanding proposal. Alas, this was still back in the days in which a woman had to be saved by a man. True to such fashion, Partenope enlists Arsace to lead the troops, much to the jealousy of the other suitors in the room. And there we have it, the die has been cast. We now have a pompous prince, a neighboring aggressor, a timid let's just be friends character, and behind door number four, a bitter ex-girlfriend of the pompous prince who is herself dressed as an adoring prince, all claiming to desire the hand of our title character, Partenope. In short, girl meets two boys, then meets another boy who is actually a girl, and then meets another boy who threatens war. What could possibly happen next? Intermission, of course. In fact, it will be your first of two intermissions this evening, during which you'll have just enough time to use the facilities and procure a refreshing and/or inebriating beverage before the polite ding-donging once again summons you back to your seats for Act Two. Don't forget to get the sippy cup lid to bring that drink back in with you. We begin Act Two with a battle scene, and no one depicts battle more royally or victoriously, as does our friend George Frederick. In this battle between the forces of Partenope and Emilio, our title character's life is saved by the shy Armindo, while both Arsace and the disguised Rosmira claim to have captured the unvictorious Emilio. This discrepancy leads Rosmira to challenge Arsace to a duel, leaving the pompous prince torn between his love for Rosmira and his eyes for the prize of marriage to Partenope. Following all this is your second of two intermissions, during which I invite you all to argue and discuss which bachelor will end up with the bachelorette's rose by the final curtain. Once again, be listening for the ding, 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 dong, informing you that our final act is about to begin. By the end of Act Two, Emilio had been sent off to prison, leaving us now with three suitors still standing. In this final act, the numerous conflicts of our chaotic tale are all neatly and cleverly wrapped up in a bow. But I shan't tell you how, in fear that no one likes a spoiler. Instead, let's talk about a bit more about Handel's music. Back in the early years of our current century, I served as a classical music analyst in the Music Genome Project at Pandora.com. My task each workday was to spend 5 hours listening to classical music and providing numerical scores to a vast number of categories we referred to as genes. My favorite days in that job were always the ones in which a Handel opera showed up next in my queue. It was 5 hours of glorious music, and it took up the whole day. The operas of Handel portray the mastery with which the composer wrote for large orchestral forces, his unique ability to command the human voice in a variety of vocal fireworks, but also in passages of pristine and simple beauty, and the cunning ways in which he tells his stories throughout the narrative arc of a few hours. As for those orchestral forces, this opera is scored for two flutes, two oboes, bassoon, trumpet, two horns, 32 strings, and what is known as a continuo ensemble, consisting of a cello, theorbo, and harpsichord. More on them later. Our very own and renowned San Francisco Opera Orchestra is ably led today by Maestro Christopher Mulds, both at the baton and also at the harpsichord. As for the vocal fireworks, this is what Baroque opera is all about. As the opera makes its way through the story, the moments we most look forward to are the arias, those moments when all action stops and the characters instead sing of the emotions that propel and deepen the story further. Most arias we hear in Baroque opera and in Partenope are known as da capo arias. This style of aria is divided into three sections. The first section contains the main musical theme and dramatic emotion of the aria, and is followed by an often contrasting section, both in mood and emotion. We then repeat the opening section, hence the name da capo, an Italian musical term indicating that the musicians should return to the top of the musical number. It is these repeated sections that the real magic happens. Rather than hearing the opening section exactly as we heard it the first time, the singer, and even at times the instrumentalists, are invited to embellish and ornament the musical lines and phrases. It is these embellishments that allow the singer to show off their technical abilities, much in the same way we might expect in an instrumental concerto. While the weeks ahead will bring us all too many displays of fireworks, I'm sure your dogs will love that, as we celebrate Pride, Juneteenth, and the birth of our troubled nation, none will be as impressive as the vocal fireworks displayed on our stage here at the War Memorial Opera House. Julie Fuchs, making her company debut in the title role of Partenope, along with Daniela Mack as Rosmira, Carlo Vistoli, also making his company debut as Arsace, Nicholas Tamagna, another company debut as Armindo, Alex Schrader as Emilio, and Hadley Adams as Ormonte, advisor to the Queen, bring us a tour de force of Baroque artistry and interpretation that is not to be missed. There are a few other musical features I wish to highlight for you today. In addition to the da capo aria, another prominent feature of Baroque opera, as well as many more decades of opera to follow, is the recitative. These are the clearly defined sections of an opera in which the actions of the story are delivered in a recitation-like style of singing. A few paragraphs back, I referred to the continual ensemble consisting of cello, theorbo, and harpsichord. It is this ensemble that most often accompanies a recitative in the operas of the Baroque, Classical, and early Romantic eras. A lot can happen during these sections, and you'll want to keep a careful eye on the titles above the stage. They'll provide you with an English translation of the Italian libretto. Unless, of course, you are fluent in Italian, then you can skip the playing of ping pong back and forth between the stage and the supertitles and just listen to the words and the lovely music. These supertitles perform the same function during the arias and ensemble numbers, though I encourage you to spend less time watching those translations and instead focus on the emotions portrayed by the music and, again, those vocal fireworks. As with most operas, the full range of the human voice is utilized within our cast of characters. These vocal ranges include the highest notes of the female soprano all the way to lowest tones of the male bass. Unlike most operas, however, Baroque opera commonly makes use of a vocal type that may be unfamiliar to modern audiences. That is the voice of the countertenor, a male singer with a highly developed falsetto, allowing the singer to perform in a range normally commanded by female singers. The origin of this voice type comes from the Italian castrati. The name alone tells you everything you need to know about how this voice type was first achieved. Castrati. Such a practice is thankfully no longer in style today. Characters originally written for the castrati singer were eventually, and still today, interpreted by either a male countertenor or female mezzo-soprano or contralto. In this production, you will see and hear those castrati roles magnificently performed by countertenors Carlo Vistoli and Nicholas Tamagna. Thanks to modern composers such as Benjamin Britten and contemporary composers such as Philip Glass, a growing amount of newer repertoire for the male countertenor is making its way into the canon of operatic standards around the world. Another notable talent in Handel's remarkable craft is that of text painting. This is when the music, both in the vocal line and instrumental accompaniment, is intended to depict the actions, emotions, or physical setting within any given scene. A fabulous example of Handel's text painting is found during the aria sung by our Queen of Naples, Qual Falfaletta. In this aria, Partenope has just tricked Armindo into admitting his love for her, and she in turn admits that Arsace is her preferred suitor. Her words in the main section of this da capo aria translate to, "Like a butterfly, I flutter around that fire, and my cupid sets its lovely feathers on fire." As we listen to the following excerpt from Qual Farfalletta, keep an ear out for that fluttering butterfly. Audio example number 2, please. Could you all hear the fluttering butterfly? Be sure not to make shadow puppets of butterflies during that aria, please. You'll just annoy the people behind you. But it is music like that that makes up some of my most favorite moments of Handel. The unthinkable beauty found within the orb of our Mother Earth is animated and brought to life as though the composer of music is instead a painter of the most sublime settings to be seen by the human eye. Well, with all that now said, I believe you are adequately prepared to handle and enjoy the next few hours of glorious opera brought to you by our friend George Frederick Handel. By the day's end, I hope you'll find this divertissement of musical storytelling to be as glorious as I do. And while I remind you that some in Handel's time found this story to be the worst ever, and this opera to be frivolous in general, let me also point you towards the remarks of current-day critics who have called this production a fizzy, free, associative delight, a striking night in Paris, and a joyous depiction of Handel's playfulness, but also his deeply empathetic understanding of love. Even more glowing than that, our very own seasoned opera scholar, Peter Susskind, texted me immediately following the dress rehearsal the other night to say, "You have a hit on your hands. Partenope is hands down the best of the three." The three he's referring to is, of course, the three productions we offer at San Francisco Opera this month. But before you can agree or disagree with Peter, you must first see all three. If you have yet to experience our amazingly innovative production of Mozart's The Magic Flute, or our haunting and deeply impactful American premiere of Kaija Saariaho's Innocence, there is still time. Be the first to snag the few remaining tickets still available for these groundbreaking productions by visiting or calling our fabulous and friendly box office staff, 415-864-3330, or go online to sfopera.com. Well, my time with you today now comes to an end, and I'm so glad we had this time together. Luckily for you, your experience is just beginning, and I leave you now to enjoy Partenope, a comic opera in three acts by George Frederick Handel, presented at the War Memorial Opera House by San Francisco Opera in this, our 101st season of storytelling. Again, I'm Cole Thomas Enridis, and you are now about, 15 minutes or so away from that oh-so-polite ding, 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 dong that will herald you back to your seats for Act 1. Thank you for joining me at San Francisco Opera, where opera is for everyone.